Mana prasarastram yatvam manam atma vinigraha bhavastan sudhiya hit ethat tapo manasam uchate.
To begin translation and so forth. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. Good afternoon, please. And satisfaction,
satisfaction,
simplicity,
simplicity,
gravity,
gravity,
self-control,
self-control,
and purification,
and purification
of one's existence,
of one's existence,
are the austerities of the mind.
Are the austerities of the mind.
Srila Prabhupada reports, to make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature, to become Krishna is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense gratification. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification. And so there is no possibility of the mind becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as is in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in that sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activity. First, I'd like to thank all of you for allowing me to come here. It's auspicious. Now Yogendra Maharaj is present. It's his first time being here. It's actually the first time I've actually been in this building. I've only peeped in, I guess, twice. Somehow, I've been unfortunate. I've never actually been inside the building. But it is Maharaj's very first time also. So it's so overwhelming. It's overwhelming, and you hear it all the time. The devotees are coming to visit constantly. And so they're constantly talking, of course, about the pilgrimage. This is just such a chirpa. So much of the consciousness of Srila Prabhupada, the devotees, and trying to be compassionate on the world has been started here. It's like, you know, there's a phenomenon today of people trying to search out their heritage, their genealogy, people trying to understand their roots, people trying to understand more just about gender and about the idea of being itself. But for us, we are not just a religion or a philosophy. We're not just a culture. We're not just an alternative group. But we're literally connected with Lord Chaitanya's tree. So we are assisting, in whatever meager way that we can, we're assisting the Lord in his most esoteric manifestation, that is really the most amazing extension of his compassion. Because Krishna has many limbs and many, many pastimes. He has many opulences of Bhagavan, Krishna through Bhagavan's story. But his greatest opulence is his mercy on the conditioned soul. And his greatest presentation, Namona Ma Bhadanaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namah Govinda Jaya Namah. When he comes to do just this, when he comes to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement, when he comes to create an environment where he can engage in kirtan, taking prasadam with the devotees. And so, those who he sent to do that most important work for him are also most important to him. So he sends such great mystic citizens to the Prabhupada to come to do that kind of work. And when they come, how do they come? They come in disguise so that they can be even more merciful. Because if they would come with all their splendor, first it would be overwhelming, and it would not be seemingly as personal. If it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead with all his entourage, his powerful assistance, how they come in into these hellish environments. And they come to act, not act like us totally, but they come literally to seemingly to take on human attributes of character. Just to make the lesson easier for us to understand it. Like sometimes the teacher sits down by the student. The teacher writes the ABC for the student. So the teacher sits right next to the student, sometimes in the same chair, desk, and goes through the simplistic motion of making the A and the B and the C so that the student can be able to understand something that's very complex. When you think about the idea of language, of paragraphs, conceptions, connotations that are given through mastering the language. But the teacher comes to make the ABC to show how the senses are just letters that make paragraphs and ideas, etc. So this is the aspect of the Godhead that we are connected with. It's overwhelming how to involve. I mean, just even for us today, just going on Harinam, and to see how much of a hell this is. You know, sometimes you can hear about hell, but to see it, and people get green hair and blue hair and yellow hair, that's wonderful in one sense because they're really saying they are not going to be normal in an insane environment. They're saying they're going to say, everybody know this place is insane. Material world, material life. And they're not going to just play ridiculous games of acting like everything is okay. So they may not have the solutions of how to deal with it, but they're showing that we are not going to exist based on the norms of society. We're going to dress differently, we're going to act differently, we're going to look differently, we're going to think about different things. Now they just need the transcendental. This is how some of the initial devotees who started the movement. They were also from the counter so-called culture. They were also not willing to accept the hype. The hype that if you simply achieve over others, whatever you have to do for your sovereign interest, then you'll be successful. Make a lot of money. Become very prestigious. Become very powerful. Acquire as many commodities and assets as you can, and you'll be happy. So many of the early devotees who joined the movement, who helped the sadhu right from this building, who heard some of the first times right in this room, they heard a message that they have been waiting to hear, in some cases for lifetimes. Many heard a message that they have particularly taken birth in this human body to be able to hear. They heard it right in this little room, in this environment, where it is where sense gratification is so much maximized. Everywhere, restaurants, clubs, everybody's looking. It's like people who are resting in the cubbyholes, looking for sense gratification. People come from other parts of the city just to come down these areas for sense gratification. They get dressed up, they get their money, they get in their car, they're thinking, we're going to go here, there, to sense that. And they're bringing all that energy of greed and lust and avariciousness with them as they grab from the sense that. So, we can have many, many programs here and never express enough about the importance of the consciousness and the energy that is associated with this particular system. We can have many, many programs and never fully address the potency of Srila Prabhupada as a world, international, interplanetary acharya, who out of such mercy, at such an old age, with physical body, comes in these environments, making arrangements so that his children and grandchildren can be freed of these prisons. So every time we come here, hear about this place, pass by, remind each other, those of you who are so blessed to be able to be honored to oversee now the activities here. You are very special. You know, Krishna doesn't do things by accident. Even material things are not happening by accident. There's always a controlling aspect. And what to say of these spiritual activities, that they are even more so categorically, emphatically, distinctly arranged based on how we're willing to let Krishna come through. So Krishna has chosen for one of his very great associates to come into these hellish environments and to start by coming to one of the most hellish cities and one of the most sense gratification oriented places in the world. And therefore, some of you are so blessed to be able to maintain such a place to remind us. Because in these days, it is very easy sometimes to forget why we have come to Krishna consciousness, why we're undergoing the austerity, why it's so important to remain enthusiastic, why it's so important to remain free of becoming slack and taking things for granted, why it's so important to maintain Vedic culture over materialistic, tribal, nationalistic, racialistic culture, why it's so important to maintain Krishna consciousness in spite of so many, many, many obstacles and adversarial considerations. And this is one of the reasons why Krishna always does such amazing things in, like miracles. Even if we look at basic religiosity, how Jesus, born in a manger, such a great spiritual teacher, how Prophet Muhammad, a literate, and orphan, showing constantly, if you look at the different acharyas, Madhavendra Acharya, Ramanuja Acharya, Sankara Acharya, we'll see so many amazing things about their lives that show even more so Krishna's compassion and how these great entities are working on behalf of the commission they have for uplifting consciousness and for being able to be an extension of Krishna's love. So Srila Prabhupada coming with practically no money, not knowing anyone of any significance, coming to a place that is so difficult to be able to maintain, and in spite of all of that, coming to people who in one sense, although they had good intentions, their life was so much against any sense of authority and regulation. And he called them in and said, come on in. One who was there, able to look at, to come to look in, and some came in just by passing by. And they came in. And literally, they came in to participate in what they were running from, but they now could involve themselves in the thing spiritually. Sometimes we think that spiritual life is the opposite of material. But they wanted a difference, but they needed a spiritual difference, and not just the converse of the material. They were against structures and regulation, and they were against imposition, and they were against falsity, and they were against duplicity, and they were against exploitation. And little did they want anyone to tell them that something is of absoluteness. But then they came in and Prabhupada let them know, yes, this is there, but there is spiritual variety, and there is spiritual culture and spiritual form and spiritual adequacy that is based on the receiving of Krishna's love. And some of the same people who have so much been against any type of ruse, from the way they clean themselves, the way they dress, from the way they interact with, now he brought them in and told them there is something higher to be about. Don't be just reactive to material culture and stop this and do this and do this. This is a reaction to material sense gratification culture. But appreciate that there is spiritual culture and it is dynamic. So they were so much involved in precepts. There's so much involved in drugs. So you want to know, then know, yes, having an altered state of consciousness, there's nothing wrong with that, and pursuing that, and wanting that, wanting the ecstasy, there's nothing wrong with that, but there is a natural way how to do that. Not to engage in narcotizing ourselves more by external stimuli with the idea of trying to have a sense of liberty. He wants them to know that yes, loving and being loved, that is a natural aspect of the soul. But it is not manifested through living by lust instead of love. Living with one man, one woman, this day, that day. That was not, he was telling them, that is not the idea of being free with love. But it is another aspect of the same old system, old thought form. I want them to know that as we understand the soul of the Atman, then we understand relationships based on service. We understand how to have altered state or how to be high in the sense of being absorbed, absorbing the mind, free from the mundane habits. We will discuss some small points about the mind. This verse talks about controlling of the mind. One of the major difficulties that the world is facing is the mindset is so much in the mode of ignorance and passion. Sometimes it's bad too. And so the things that we occupy the mind with, we get more of that. People who are rushing down here for sense gratification, so they're thinking about it at home, they're rushing to down here, they go back home, think about the next time they're going to engage in sense gratification. They get more and more of the same. They become more addicted. And of course, more frustrated. Because there is such an inward, inherent desire for some type of higher realization and greater pleasure. But we don't find that by more of the same narcotizing that has put us in the misery that we're in. So, according to how the mind attaches itself, determines consciousness. Someone who's in the mode of ignorance, they are allowing their senses. See, we have the hierarchy of the body, and so we know that there are different senses. Working senses, etc. And then the higher in the body is the senses, and higher in the senses, of course, is the mind. Higher than the mind, of course, is the intelligence. Higher than intelligence. So the body, as it moves about in different environments, these senses are being bombarded by the things in the atmosphere. This is where we're walking, so there's some noise. There's something to smell, there's something to see, something from full Vega, Bhakti Vega, Manasa, Sora Vega, Viva Vega. So the senses are being pulled Now, as the senses are getting the stimulation, the senses start demanding to the mind, do something about it. Nose is smelling something and wants to experience it more. The ears are hearing something. The eyes are seeing something. And they give dictates, demands to the mind. Now, do something. If the mind is weak, when the senses start making their demands, then the mind will find ways to fulfill the desires of the senses. The average person in Kali Yuga is just literally being dragged as the mind is captured and enslaved by the senses. The Papa gives the example. He says, if a man has 6 wives, or a woman has 6 husbands. And so, what is happening is that one of the wives is saying, but, dear, give me attention, or come here, or satisfy me. And so, how difficult is it to become? So the senses are pulling, each demanding attention, each demanding gratification, and each trying to find a way to make the mind favorite to its demand. And so the mind is basically helpless unless it is backed up by strong intelligence. The Prabhupada gives an example of the weakness of the senses. Just like there's fish in the water, because of its lack of control, the tongue. The fisherman throws in the bait, and the fish grabs, and it eats the fish. The guy should grab the one. And the firefly is so attracted to the light, to the fire. So the sight of the fire is so compelling that it goes closer, goes in, and eats the fish. And the deer is very much attuned to nice sounds. So a flute, an instrument is played, and the deer becomes attracted and often will come to you because of lack of control. It needs a sense. Sometimes the hunter catches an elephant, a big hole, with a she-elephant on the other side. And when the male elephant comes to mate, it falls in the hole and gets captured. Because of the desire of satisfying the human. So, the most astounding thing with the human form, in most species, one sense is so much very strong, very dominant. But basically, in the human form in general, all the senses are pulling. Now, the tongue is very, very powerful, but each sense is pulling and demanding. And just like the example in Bhagavad Gita, how a chariot is there, a charioteer, and 6 different horses, each horse representing a different sense. You can visualize it, you've seen the picture in the Bhagavad Gita, that you're driving on a cliff, trying to control the horses. Now, even if one horse gets too wild, it can pull the entire chariot to devastate. So any one sense, doesn't have to be even all 6, any one sense that gets too wild, it can cause total imbalance and death of the soul. The mind, the brain, working hard and trying to control. But if the horses are stronger than the ropes and stronger than the driver, then the horses are in control. And you see that. You see that some people, their senses are so dominant that they have no sense of effort. Some people are so much poor this way that they'd be considered crazy. So whatever they feel, they do it. They have no sense of control. So the senses are so dominant. But as there's more maturation and more spirituality, we begin to decipher. This is not right. This is not proper. This is not to be done. Or this is not to be done, but let me find a way how to sneak and do it. According to consciousness. Now some people, they hear the voices and they act upon it. Because see, even when the senses are pulling you, if they've been beating the mind too much, then the mind begins to whisper nonsense. You can see how we're so much divided. Sometimes the mind says, like whispering, jump. You're going across the bridge. And the mind just says, jump. See what it'll be like. You're walking across the street. And the mind says, walk slow. Let the car hit you. The mind says, see the nice trip, nice point. And someone who doesn't have at least a sense of control of the mind, when the mind does these things, they immediately act upon it. People do wretched things. Some people have even become possessed. And so they have lost as if the body is time-sharing. So in that body is another presence. Now the president is giving all kind of demands. You look at the biographies of most serial killers. People who just do vicious murders or do most heinous, most ignorant things. Many of them mention how they hear voices. The voices tell them, get a gun, get a knife, stab the person, do this, cut their heart out. They hear voices. Because they're possessed. They don't have any type of spiritual strength to be able to ward off such things. Or their mindset is so much of a low energy that such things can settle in and then be able to use and manipulate the body. You realize that most people are possessed. Because most people are constantly draining in mundane sounds, mundane thoughts, mundane food, mundane lifestyles, and therefore they are so much imbibing lower energy. And therefore, no wonder we see now an increase in children killing their parents, an increase in suicide, homicide, like all over the planet. Because demons like to see chaos, destruction. They like to see pain being imposed on society. And they particularly want to see people less pious, more atheistic, more angry, to the point that they will curse at God, curse at each other. And the demons get power by them. And now people are having seances. People are doing many types of demonic rituals. People are chanting many demonic hymns, lyrics. People are wearing many demonic types of clothing. And therefore, they are attracting such presence. They are empowering such things. And if they do such things, the world becomes gradually overpopulated. This is why now there is so much earthquake, hurricane, tornado, flood. Because people are literally inviting in more and more negative energy and are being more exploitive to Mother Bhumi. Are being more exploitive to each other in relationships. And this is just causing scatteredness throughout the cosmos. And so therefore, what happens by that is people who are weak, they get more and more bombarded by such negative energies that affect their mind. They have the thing now called burnout. People experiencing more hypertension, ulcers, high blood pressure, sugar, diabetes. So many things related to the mind being overloaded, depressed. Depression is on the rise like anything. Even some Radhavodis. Becoming manic depressive. Because they are so much captured by not protecting the mind and letting so much go into the mind from the atmosphere by allowing the senses soon have a children. And they dictate to the mind, I'm hungry, I want this, I want that, do something about it. And when the intelligence is strong, the intelligence says, that is not the right. That is not the right thing. That will not be included. That will not be beneficial to sadly. That is not according to something. So we regulate the senses. And as we regulate the senses, they become less demanding to the mind. Now once we start more and more engaged in spiritual activities, the mind becomes envious. Because the spiritual activity is giving attention to the soul. So the mind, in this lifetime, and many other lifetimes, it has been supreme. And now, that mind that has been so much catered to and stroked is being denied. And that is why you notice when you first join the movement, you start trying to make more vows, you start trying to commit yourself more, you see many, many challenges. And as you listen to the things that go in the mind, it's almost like a crazy person. The mind says, how do you know that Krishna is God? I mean, you spend all your life perhaps doing these austerities, and maybe at the end there's no Krishna. The mind says, you want to join that society? The people wear bed sheets? war paint on their face? Little turf coming off their head? You want to join that society? They're going to make you Indian. They're chauvinistic. They're just, you want, what? That society? Mine will find a million ways just to try to find how it can disturb you from rising above. And it will then back away when it sees that you are not giving it attention, just to regroup to see how to attack you more devastating. There's always the attendant. Not even think that, oh, now I'm okay. I've been a devotee for 5 years, 10 years, 3 years, 15 years, 25, 30. There's always consider Maya around the corner, waiting for another way to find a chance to create disturbance. So what do? We must, especially at this day and time, realize, as the Bhagavad Gita says, the mind can be your greatest friend or greatest enemy. We must basically see it as the greatest enemy until it becomes more controlled. It is the greatest enemy because it knows all of our. It's the greatest enemy because it knows all of our weaknesses. And it's the greatest enemy because it will capitalize off those weaknesses. Wherever we are weak, that is where the mind, Maya, is going to find a way to make its attack. So imagine having someone who wants to be about your demise, who knows all of your secrets, who knows where you're weak, and is able to watch you all the time. That can't be a great enemy. No, but you can hide from the enemy sometimes. You keep some secrets. You know the enemy. You can be on guard when you're around. But it's always a thing. It's only by transcendental arrangements that such things be dealt with. Otherwise, it's impossible. That's why Arjuna says to control the mind. It is more difficult than controlling the wind. So on our own, we cannot fully control the mind. But by the transcendental support and backing and engagement, and by trickery, see, we have to trick the mind. We have to trick the mind by keeping it occupied with that is beneficial, that it has less and less and almost no time to engage in nonsense. Each time the mind comes up with some nonsense, we feed it with some activity, some spiritual activity. And after a while, that mind wears down, and the intelligence becomes stronger and stronger, and the senses now are no longer habituated to giving it to the mind. But then when the mind starts giving its demands, it sends it to what? They're not ready to be the slaves of the mind anymore. But it takes a while. A regulating senses, keeping the senses from sense gratification until we become a little more stable and no longer to engage. Now the same person goes past McDonald's and the mind says, don't you remember? Milkshake, fish fries, hamburgers. It's funny. But now you've been away from that for a while and you tell the mind, no. You walk on. Huh? But if we have not strengthened ourselves sufficiently, we're not having the proper intelligence why we don't want to do those things, then before we know it, we'll be walking right in, eating such things, and then later we'll think, oh my God, what have I done? Just like sometimes, say at Sunday feast, or sometimes even here, someone comes in the first time, and we had coming here, I was just noticing how, this little while ago when I went to the shower, everybody, at least in this area, is a philosopher. I mean, I saw two seemingly, you know, sexy-looking gentlemen. They were philosophical. I mean, they were espousing all kinds of stuff. They probably couldn't even figure out how to get the next quarter, next dollar. But they were solving all kinds of stuff. But I was just thinking, huh? Sense gratification, it has ways to make us a little crazy. And to think that we know all the answers. And we have all the insights. So sometimes we can have someone, we're trying to preach to them. And they're like mad with their philosophy and their ideas. And it's completely crazy. They give you the idea how everybody is actually inside of a whale. That there's nothing but a big whale, an animal, a whale. And we're all inside of it. And one day we're going to realize that we're nothing but arteries and veins. The mind has a philosophy. And actually, we're all just ants. And we're just pretending. And the ants are really, they're the real simple ones. They have the real intelligence. Any kind of crazy philosophy. Somebody is talking something crazy. And sometimes you just have to listen to them for a little while. But you're not really accepting it. But you're just waiting till they can stop the nonsense. And then you tell them something. And then you wait, they get some more nonsense. Then you tell them. So we have to do the mind almost similar to how we kind of tolerate and are compassionate for somebody who is a little crazy. And even though they are given some discussion, we in no way are taking it seriously. So when the mind starts coming up with its craziness, we have to let it play itself out a little bit, and then we have to feed it. Is that of the intelligence? So just as you would do like that, you would just be compassionate, considerate, and you're thinking, what a crazy one. When the mind is coming up with something, you're just thinking, oh, crazy mind again. But in no way do you take it as a serious proposition. Because the senses in the body are prone to do different things. The eyes, the nose, some stimulation is prone. But the difficulty is when we allow ourselves to identify with the mind. Once we identify with it, then we start acting based on what it is presenting, and we try to own it, we try to relate to it, we try to act upon it, we try to pursue it. But where we are considering now that some pushes is there, some stimulation is there, some anxiety is there, but we do not play into it. It's like if somebody says something to you, very harsh, and tell you, oh, you are so ugly. Your face, it hurts my mind to just look at your face. Now, your mind can play into that and become angry and even violent. Or you can perceive it and codify it totally different. According to how you codify it, that's going to determine what your response is. As you accept the idea, as you accept the attack, as you tune into it, as you come down to it, then you plug right into the energy of it. Bhagavad Gita doesn't say one who is dear to Krishna is one who does not see the happiness or distress, does not get exposed or bombarded by it. It's one who is unaffected by it. So being in the material body, being in the material world, means that constantly they are bombardment. But then we must be able to not let the mind align itself or identify with it as the total reality. But we allow the mind to see it as just something in passing. Something is in passing, we do not latch onto it. As soon as we latch onto it, then it's become a part of us, and now we go through the experience of fall down or deviation or disturbance. But as we see it, something that is going by, then we just say, only the mind doing its thing. And after a while, what happens? Even someone who is trying to attack you, if you're constantly ignoring them, avoiding them, what do? They go somewhere else. They have no desire to keep on bothering you, and they're not getting some type of reciprocation. So that same mind, as it is pushing, and we no longer keep giving into it, nor do we go into a big lamenting about what it is presenting. Sometimes we can go into lamenting so much about what the mind is presenting, and now we've created a mantra that we have actually reinforced it. But as we allow it to just pass by, not owning it, not identifying with it, and not making the big disturbance that it is presenting as nonsense. And then gradually the intelligence gets stronger, because the intelligence is closer to the soul, and it allows us to be able to grasp hold more to transcendental subject matter. So when the mind starts coming up with its craziness, you have to tell it, no. This is like another person presenting something to you, you would qualify it first. Because the mind is presenting its stuff, you want to qualify it and see to what degree it is encouraging the service of Guru, to what degree it is helping us to be able to serve and glorify Sadhguru, to what degree it is that which is of Shastra, of Scripture. A little late, so I don't want to talk, it's too long. But in summary, we should see the mind at this point basically as our greatest enemy. It can be a friend, but it only becomes a friend after it's been significantly ignored. It's just significantly conquered over by the intelligence through the agency of transcendental knowledge. That the senses, they naturally, being bombarded by the environment, and their duty is to give them the order to the mind. And as the senses are being bombarded, we first can be a little more careful about the environment that we're associating with. Sometimes by when we work, or we have to do, or even just coming to these environments, we can't avoid such things. But as the reflections, as the pushes are there, then we don't want to get overworked up in trying to stop them, because that feeds it more. Or do we want to own it and identify with it? But we want to trick the mind by keeping the mind more absorbed in the higher things so that it has less energy, less time, and less strength to go for the negative. Whatever in our own lives, we find we're getting depressed, angry, disturbed, we have to let it send an alarm to us that we're not sufficiently challenging the mind into something that is higher. We don't want to have any sense of idleness, because we know that idleness, even ambiguity, is a time for Maya to sneak in and to make a few devastating blows. So as we are here in this great tirtha, we want to absorb the mind, and particularly how Srila Prabhupada struggled and made a very powerful movement in spite of many material obstacles. We want to look and see how many devotees that went year after year, 25, 30 years in Krishna consciousness, in spite of so many challenges from relatives, from friends, from the institution itself, so many things, and to realize that ultimately everyone is being individually monitored by Guru Vishnu. Everyone is being asked to take on somehow their austerity of the mind by being able to say no to the mind in the sense of engaging it in the higher activity. So we'll stop there and see if there's any questions or any comments. Basic considerations about the idea of the kirtan and what our spiritual heritage and connection is, in relationship to controlling of the mind, rather than being a slave of the mind and the senses. Anyone have a question or comment? You sure comment? We should never just take it at this state, especially, that we have the clarity to be able to hear and understand the super soul. First thing we understand is that the idea of Shastra is there for check and balance. The conception of Guru, that the Guru is helping us understand more and more of how to serve Krishna, or the super soul that is now coming out, the extension of manifestation of Guru. See, many times people will act upon what feels okay. And this can be so relative and so transitory. Because what may feel good to you this time to this person to another person can all just be based on the sensual stimulation. And something that sometimes even feels good to the senses is not necessarily good for one's existence. Something that sometimes even feels good to the mind is not necessarily any benefit for the soul. So we don't want to base it on such things, but we want to take it and to qualify it to see how that fits with the examples that we see in the scripture, what we are reading and hearing in the scripture. We want to take it and see based on what Krishna is saying. In this way, we allow Krishna to come. Otherwise, the mind will play many tricks in rationalizing so many things that may seem practical, but are not transcendental. Anyone else?
How can we overcome self-desire?
As we were saying, not to think that we have to kill desire. We get too uptight about having desires, then we're like asking for death, because the body is always desiring and having some experience. And only when the body is at a point of disease is there no stimulation or reaction to the environment. So we're not trying to do as the Buddhists. And even that is impossible, to stop desires, to stop thoughts, etc. But we're trying to, we're trying to engage the lower in the higher. We're trying to make a transference of energy, like change the station. We're trying to do those things that are now spiritually variegated and stimulated. It has something to do with the sense of our greater well-being. So, no problem with desires. It's a matter of whether those desires are more in the spirit of serving Krishna, or those desires are trying to run away from Krishna. Trying to serve Krishna, trying to run away from Krishna, then we have now to convert that energy to that one. And sometimes people think, our devotional service is just rules and regulations, and don't do this, and don't do that. Sometimes, you know, when a new person comes, we treat them in that way, and it becomes so bewildering. Boo! Don't put your feet back there! Boo! What? Cross for that? Boo, how could you? How could you go into the school room with that, with your Harinam chart on? The person gets it from everywhere, you know. So we'll pick up your book, wash your hands, and the person just gets so bewildered. They think, who are these people? They run out the door one night, huh? Leave the sleeping bag behind. Papa once told us, when I was chatting with the library party, early days of September, he told us, when we were going to the colleges and universities, he told us, don't go in preaching to the people, to the students, about rules and regulations. Preach to them that this is a higher philosophy, so they can understand why to do this and why not to do that. And especially these days, people don't want to be imposed upon. Don't do this, don't do that, and they figure, oh, why? Well, the more they hear don't, the more they're eager to, you know, to do. But if we approach people in that way, even though, you know, they're doing something wrong, but we have to encourage them in a compassionate way and help them to understand why something is improper, and then they will have the zeal to do that which is right. But if we're just telling them, don't. So, and often our minds will tell us like this. This movement is just, don't do this, don't do that, don't. And people say, Krishna consciousness, it denies all of the basic pleasures. What do you people do? Sometimes you meet one of your old friends and say, well, what do you do? They can offer you this, you know. You know? Because usually friendship means people come together to mutually poison each other. And they call it friendship. Huh? Some of you know, right? You want your old friends? Huh? You come to the house, they come to your house, they expect you to poison them, they expect you to receive some of their poison. Huh? Oh, you don't smoke this one anymore? But we'll take this. Well, oh, you have something new. What kind of pills do you have? You must have something different. Because friendship means some way how you agree to mechanicize each other as, and that's called friendship. But you know, we'll say no to such craziness. Friendship means that we stop committing violence with each other. Anything that we do that doesn't help the person to be encouraged spiritually, committing violence against each other. So therefore, we want to live our life in such a way that it encourages someone to take to a more serious change, serious alternative. Not just to recognize the problem, and then to do something that reinforces it. Recognize the problem. Like most of you, especially those of you who are young, you're almost 50 years old now, so I was feeling like I was 19 trying to dance, you know. For about 10 minutes, then I started from the pain.
So I started dancing different ways just to keep the same distance. Bodhi said I was a dancer, but I was moving different ways to kind of shift the pain. So, you know, when we're young, we're even more able to sometimes to see certain things. We're eager to categorize and identify. But we want to help people to be able to identify and now to see what some of the solutions are. Not just to see the faults of society and whatnot, but to have a real positive alternative. What do you think? What is the best question?
The Krishna thought, is it possible at all for a Krishna conscious person to live with someone with a different belief?
It's possible for someone to live with someone who has a different belief. Everything is possible. But if you love someone and you see them poisoning themselves, you see them torturing themselves, and you are there to watch it, then you're either reinforcing it or sure your love isn't strong, because if you can't stop it, you can't change it, then if there's a real sense of compassion, you surely can't be around to see it. So the more that we become compassionate and fix the Krishna consciousness, it becomes very, very difficult to be with someone extensively who is doing things that is very detrimental to themselves, and to not to try somehow to help and to or to make a change. We've done very good. Now also we must remind ourselves that who we're associated with, we're giving some of our consciousness to them and they're giving some of their consciousness to us. You're not able to elevate somebody's consciousness, but it means you're getting so much zapped by theirs. There's no neutrality in the relationship. There's always an exchange of energy. So somehow you're not able to raise the environment and do believe the environment is acting upon you.
I know that the idea is to maintain our Krishna consciousness and to be even minded in pretty much all situations. But sometimes, even for myself, different services, for example, in school or I work with set up here, it's actually very difficult to maintain that even mind and to, you know, there's happiness and respect.
It's just, maybe we're in here. Is this a matter of being more in the world but not of the world? That too much distress means that you're too much identified with things of the world. We have this body and we have to, you know, function differently. Sometimes we have certain jobs, we're in universities and whatnot. But we really have to be so much more inwardly connected with thinking about the philosophy and with trying to engage in the idea of preparing ourselves for various types of services while we are trying to do some services, you know? The means and the ends have to be somewhat similar. Otherwise, even if we have good intentions and we're undergoing, you know, a difficult environment with the idea that eventually I'm going to use this to serve Krishna, but if somehow we're not using it now, it will get totally drained. And by the time we are finished with that environment will have already finished us off. Sometimes people get into university, into politics, and these things. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, except for the individual. But sometimes in the process of trying to prepare ourselves, we begin to take up so much of the mentality of the environment. And when we do that, then we'll be shocked to look back and to see how much we have rationalized sense gratification, how much we've given up strictness, how much we're beginning to think like the mature. A devotee cannot be imposing, but a devotee being around materialists should distinctly feel foreign, should distinctly feel out of place. Because first, you're trying to love Krishna, be around people who are envious of God, who hate God, be around people who completely think that Krishna is impersonal. Just like, you know, some of you are parents. You have a child. I mean, can you really be comfortable around somebody